A, I know what I don't know, and B, I am curious to discover what I don't know.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Katie Benson, the current manager of Pro Scout for the Utah Jazz and the general manager for the Salt Lake City Stars. Katie was one of the most efficient shooters of the modern college game. She began her career at Harvard as a three-time All-Ivy selection before transferring to Maryland and later playing with the Washington Mystics in the WNBA. After her playing career, she moved into basketball operations and development with stops at Buckingham Brown and Nichols School, and now being with the Salt Lake City Stars and Utah Jazz. In this episode, we discuss her growth as a shooter, the best feedback she has received in her career to help her excel, and her current responsibilities and her current role as the GM. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Katie Benson. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches, and thanks everybody for tuning into another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You have your hosts here, Doug and Alan. Our special guest, we're excited. She is somebody who has, learning. She has multiple hats on, not only just the manager of pro scouting for the Utah Jazz, but also the GM, general manager for the Salt Lake City Stars. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Katie Benson. Coach Benson, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You have a nice history, and the growth that you have had as a young coach is absolutely, it's astonishing. And honestly, going through this, when we were looking over your, you know, your background, as we always like to do, it's definitely a great growth. There's a lot of, from the position you're in now as a young coach. And I mean, at this point, we said the ceiling is like, that's just the minimum, because you're going to be up in the Stars soon. So it's great to be able to see the growth that you have had. But just kind of talking on that, you have earned a reputation as a player. So we'll start from there. And before you even got into the coaching realm, you earned a reputation as one of the most efficient shooters in the country. So that will just kind of throw out there. I always like to tell people, I'll do the bragging for you. So don't even worry about having that, because a lot of time people want to be humble. But for you, just having that accolade, being such a strong pivotal player with your time playing at Harvard, playing at Maryland, going into the WNBA, like, what was your process, your mindset, developing that consistency and just that tremendous shot? Like, was there any specific drills you did growing up? Was there anything that you learned from people growing up to be able to kind of be the player that you were?
Honestly, it really is just instilled in what you said, consistency. I always, growing up, starting maybe middle school, just every day going to the gym, even when I didn't feel like it, even when I was tired, I didn't sleep well, whatever the case may be, I still went every single day. And some days it was an hour, 2 hours. Other days it was literally 20 minutes. Just get in, get the form shooting, and then get out. But having those building blocks over course of years has really instilled that confidence and then just that work ethic that I just carried with me to this day. And I think that's really why it showed up in the games. It's because I knew I've taken millions of shots before this, and just, this is just another day in the gym, and there wasn't necessarily any pressure. And then I was, thankfully, I played with great point guards that got me the wide open shots. So it wasn't all me. Like, I definitely was set up to succeed, but it definitely helped putting in the work from day one.
Yeah, for sure. You made me think of something I wrote on my board, and I'm not this smart. I stole it from Chris Paul, but it's a quote called "The reps remove doubt." And you literally kind of explain what that means, because, you know, the work you do in the dark shows up when the lights come on. And, you know, you had that confidence to trust your work. And I'm curious, who was the hand in your back? And I don't mean somebody that shoved you into basketball and your journey, especially as a player, but more so who was the nudger. I don't mean not so much the shover, but the nudger, because that's two entirely different things that we're talking about.
Sure,
but
for sure.
Who was that person for you?
I do come from a basketball family. So my mom played in college, and then also my older brother did. So I would say those two people are definitely the nudgers, but also sometimes they were the shovers. Like sometimes my brother was like, no, you need to come and play with us guys. Like, I don't care that you don't want to, you're embarrassed. Like, you need to do this. And so he definitely wore both of those hats, and we've definitely shown each other those, that tough love. And don't get me wrong, there were definitely some fights in the driveway and whatsoever, but now I'm so grateful for him to just have that bravery to give me the blunt, honest truth, regardless of if I wanted to hear it or not.
Yeah, for sure. When did you, I know the first time you played with boys, it was like probably the first time a 16-year-old gets their license and jumps on the freeway versus being in the city, you know, but like, when did that start to, was there a moment like where you said, okay, this is just basketball. Like, forget the girl playing with boys deal. Like, the moment where, like, it slowed down for you and you're like, okay, listen, this is just hoop. I'm just hooping.
To be honest, I started playing with my brother when I was maybe in third grade and he was in fifth grade. So, like, it was a long time coming. But that particular moment really happened in high school. Like, as I got more guy friends and I asked the football players like, hey, get all your friends and you'll come play against all our friends and we'll meet up at the local Y. Like, that's when it was actually fun of, okay, maybe they're bigger, stronger, faster than us, but we were quite frankly smarter. So
no offense, football guys listening, you know, she just
Yeah, it was just
don't take that the wrong way, you know.
Maybe it was just that particular group. I don't know. But we were just running like circles around them and it was a lot of fun. And the trash talking started and it was just like, now you're on our court, we're not out in the field. And so that was when like a real moment that I was like, oh wow, like despite anything, this was fun.
Yeah, you're a basketball player at that point. You're no longer a girl playing basketball. You're just a basketball player. Exactly.
What I love too is there's a couple things that you there's a couple things that you said that I really want to point out too. Is one of the first things that you said was always, you said people always say how you do things is like one, I can't get the words out. How you do one thing is how you do everything, right? You said that in the beginning is how like your development from being a player ultimately transitioned into your work ethic as a coach. And that I couldn't believe that anymore because it truly develops and you can see it. Like as soon as you get out of basketball, and I tell the guys now, the guys that I coach, the hardest thing to do is completely step away from college basketball once you graduate because your whole life changes. You have to completely, so it's like, but now you have to take that work ethic and put it into something different, you know, whatever it might be that you're doing. But then you did say before, and I want to make sure to circle back on this. You said you did a lot of form shooting. You didn't, so you weren't the type of person who would go out there, go to the 3-point line, and start chucking up shots. You were the person who kind of took it from 5 feet, the Steph Curry mentality, right? 5 feet, work your way back. That is huge. That really is something big. So I'm glad you said that. What kind of form did it look like form shooting?
So yeah, so I built a routine that I started maybe a step from the rim and did, I made 10 with just my right, 10 with just my left. And then I take a step back and then 10, 10, 10, and then just work my way back to the 3-point line. And then as my range deepened, I guess, then I would take even further steps back. But then I would just make 10 at the 5 spots around the arc. And that was quote unquote my warm up.
With both hands?
Yeah.
Jeez. So she's an ambidextrous shooting out here. You don't know. Right. You don't know which one she's going to be throwing up, lefty, right. You don't even know how to cover that.
No. Let me be clear. Like once I got to the free throw line, I did go two hands. Sorry.
Oh, so got it right here. Okay.
Those were one. Yeah. Gotcha. Sorry. I want to be clear. Yeah.
No, but just the ability. Still, like,
the ability to be able to shoot with one hand. Yeah, that was some, Kobe, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken. There was something that somebody took away as one hand. And I remember, I forget what it was in that I saw. It was some like documentary, but somebody took away his shot and he had to completely change it to the other side mid-flight, mid-in-air. And he changed it to his other hand. He goes, yeah, that's something I work on all the time. Because people ask him about it. And he goes, yeah, I work on my other hand all the time. You just don't see it because I don't need to use it. I'm just like, that's insane. You got to work on something for that one moment.
For me, it was for my lefty floater. I thought it really helped in that piece of my game.
Yeah, giant, that makes a lot of sense.
The giant killer shot. You got to have it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as a 5'6 player, I definitely needed that floater. Get it out right. Quick.
No doubt. No doubt.
So I want to talk about like kind of going from your college career. As I mentioned, you go undrafted Washington Mystics as a player. I know you had a brief stint there in the pros, and then you transitioned kind of more into the coaching, the management, operations side of basketball. I know you made a few stops, one of which, the first one being, I want to make sure to point this out to everybody because I feel like there is a lot of coaches who do this and a lot of people who this is the path they take to start. They make their own training company, Benzin Basketball Services, if I'm not mistaken. That was one of the first things that you were doing, started from training and then ultimately end up going into a couple different schools and then from the schools into the pros and the kind of the growth. But just talk about starting that company, you know, maybe some things that you learned from there, if there was anything, and then just kind of the growth and development that you've seen now from there, now being in the pros as a general manager.
Actually, how that company unfolded was, I guess, unpredicted in the sense that I didn't set out to necessarily start a company with my brother and start training kids, but just one young girl kept on coming to the same local Y, kept seeing me work out day in and day out. And then just one day her dad came up to me and was like, hey, like, I'll pay you such and such if you help my daughter out a couple days a week. So I was like, yeah, of course. Like, right. You don't even need to pay me. Like, I love this game. This has been just word of mouth spread. My brother covered a lot of the guys, like the young boys, and I covered the young girls. And then we just went back down to the basics, which I think really helped my game and my perspective, is just like everybody did the exact same drills. Like, I didn't change the drills I did every day for a 7-year-old at the time, but just the speed and the intensity changed, really. And just seeing her perseverance trying something new kind of encouraged me to do the same. And on a different level, but still doing the same of pushing myself outside my comfort zone. And so that kind of grounded me. And I think that helped in the long run of just like, you can always get that 1% better.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. It's funny. We get so much credit for making players better. Doug, I probably drive Doug nuts and our listeners nuts by saying this, but like, players make us better too. And you know, I was with one of our guys last night after practice, and he's like, thanks, coach. I'm like, no, thank you. I said, every time you stick around afterwards, I got to think about something to kind of put another carrot out in front of you. And that's helping me. And so player development is directly related to coach development. It's a two-way street. When it's at its best, it's a two-way street. And so to hear that a young girl inspired you like that in reverse, you know, that's not uncommon. I love that you said that, because that's really the essence of player development, because, you know, we get better, they get better. And, you know, they're constantly pushing us and challenging us to stay a step ahead of them.
I truly believe those player coach relationships are at its best when it's a two-way street, when the players feel comfortable, hey, but I was seeing this, or let's try that. And then the coach is like, no, like, this is what I'm thinking. This is, like, that back and forth conversation can really just take that development plan, the team, to a whole other level.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
No doubt. No, it definitely changes things. And I apologize because I did not mention one thing when I was talking about you being as a general manager. And that is also not only being a general manager, she is the youngest female general manager in the G League history. So not only apologize for leaving those facts out. I wouldn't even say that's a little fact. That's an absolutely huge fact. But I just kind of want to reflect on that a little more, just because that is, it's just, it's astonishing. It's a great accomplishment. And again, you've already bypassed the ceiling. You're going through up into the, you know, atmosphere at this point. But like, what was the moment like, one, or I should say the rise ultimately from going from that basketball services, from doing the training? I know then you kind of go into Buckingham, Nichols, and then work your way up from there. But just kind of how did those first college positions come about? And then really just kind of talk about leading into how this general manager position came about, like the work ethic, the time that you had to put in, and just kind of give young coaches who may want to be there at some point, just that kind of behind the scenes look of how a lot of it came.
So that basketball service company started when I was in high school. So that was majority just like my free time during high school. And then my position at actually a prep school, BBNN, it was just down the street from Harvard. So when I was at college, I would just honestly ride my bike over there for after school practice and for games. So that was during college. And then when I went to Maryland, I kind of took a step back and really just poured all of myself into that Power Five basketball experience. And then the door opened for Washington Mystics that I didn't necessarily expect, but was surreal to say the least.
And I saw that. The coaching position all the way to now playing in the WNBA. She's a coach and now she's playing in the league. Like, okay, all right, go ahead.
Yeah.
I love that you do learn something at every stop. That's crazy. And then I just honestly pivoted to the Utah Jazz. I was able to work with some incredible people out here. And again, I wanted to push myself outside my comfort zone. I never lived out on the West until I moved out here. I didn't know a soul in this city, but I wanted to try it. I wanted to learn from the Danny Ainge, the Justin Zanucks, the Avery Bradleys of the world, and just be a sponge in this environment.
Yeah. Wow. How did that actually, you know, was the link or the bridge from, you know, kind of Mystics to the Jazz? Like, was it a series of phone calls? Was it just like somebody threw your name out there to the Jazz? How did that actually come, you know, materialize?
So after I finished playing, I made the stereotypical calls to just get my name out there, see what's out there. I was asking about analyst positions because I have a master's in journalism. I had coaching offers, like, which I thought I was actually going to do, and in college, actually. And then somehow, small world, like Danny Ainge group was, and their family lived in the same town as I did growing up.
So
Danny's youngest son played a lot with my older brother. So we always like knew of each other. So somehow Danny Ainge found out I was making these calls. He called me. We had a series of conversations. And this was literally during the time that he was hiring Will Hardy. So he was like, wait, I may have something for you, but I got to get through this head coaching. I was like, okay, no, totally fair.
Yeah, take your time. Yeah.
Yeah. Me over here, I'll be fine.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
But then they flew me out and I interviewed with Justin Zanuck. And then the next thing I knew, I was moving out to Salt Lake City.
Wow. That's amazing. I know it was, I'm like, let me get the magnifying glass and let's lift the hood here. And how did this actually, and just, we're all one handshake away from our lives changing. It's just funny. Basketball has this amazing ability to shrink the world. And here it is, a hometown relationship of all things. Like if you live one town over, who knows? Yeah. Like it just, so that's amazing. That's
it absolutely is truly such a small world.
Oh my goodness. That's incredible.
And I got to ask too. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, it just really teaches you that you really shouldn't ever burn a bridge, right? Like who knows where someone's going to end up, move, or who they know. Like it's such a small world that your reputation and your name can really go a long way.
No doubt. But yeah. Say, hey, you go out there and are playing with Danny's son, and next thing you know, you two have a bad relationship in some way. You're not getting that phone call, and you're not getting that, and you're not, well, I don't want to say you're not, but there's a potential opportunity that you're not in the same seat that you're in now. So it's like everything is transpired ultimately from, in your case, playing basketball with somebody's son in the backyard all the time, and now it turns into it's crazy. Yeah. And again, there's a lot of hard work in there. I don't want to just make dumb it down and say you just because you're friends. Obviously, there's a lot of hard work. You have a tremendous background going to Harvard, going to Maryland, having a whole basketball background. There's a lot more that goes into it, but that's the quick sum up. But I want to ask about the GM position too, because like, as we said, with the Salt Lake City Stars, like just talk about really some duties, some responsibilities that it has, because I feel like a lot of people maybe don't necessarily know what that entails or really anything about a general manager.
So honestly, each day can be different. A lot of my duties is support, at least especially now when our roster is built. But during the summer, it was a lot of scouting, agent conversations, selling the Salt Lake City Stars, the Jazz, our whole organization. And then to this day, when I've made cuts, I've brought guys in and we're good to go. Now it's just making sure our players are in the right headspace, our coaches have what they need. Sometimes it's being a sounding board. Sometimes it's sparking ideas or suggestions or whatever it may be. And then just also just keeping my eye if a roster change or a trade may come down the line. Like we were just talking about relationships. That's a big piece of my job, to, like on every single facet of whether it's another GM across the league, whether it's an agent, whether it's a player. It really boils down to those trusted relationships.
Yeah, for sure. I got to ask you this because I think it's really going to encourage a lot of coaches and people listening. And I don't know if they mentioned this to you during your interview or after they hired you, but they had to sense that you had some sort of a superpower that they needed in the building. What do you think that was, or what did they tell you they thought that was during the process? The only reason I say that is because a lot of young coaches or coaches of all ages that listen to us, you know, they're sometimes curious about the interview process and what it's like. And but I'm guessing something had to come across from you to them, or they sense and they either sensed it and didn't, you know, just say, hey, this is what we need, or they actually said it to you and said, you have fill in the blank, whatever that is, this is what we need. So what do you I guess it's a two-part question. What do you think that superpower is? And is that the same thing that the Jazz felt during the process? If that all makes sense. I know that was a lot, but.
I got you. My superpower, honestly, I think it's two-pronged, I think. A, I know what I don't know, and B, I am curious to discover what I don't know. So
those are two big ones.
A bit of it is like my first day on the job, I knew basketball. Like I knew, like watching basketball, I knew where there was talent, how coaches are manipulating things, like the X's and O's. Like I totally got that. But a bit of the scouting aspect of things is projecting them to your organization, your style of play, the role that you may change on your team. And so for me, it was making that jump of that futuristic view.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I'm going to be honest, I was not good at it. I was just like, okay, this is what the guy does. He loves going to his right or left.
And right.
Nothing more of like, okay, when he's with us, we're going to put him in flare actions where his shot can take advantage. And then it's creating closeout situations versus the Nets, for example, are putting them more like with the ball in his hands. So he's at a disadvantage without much momentum, et cetera.
Right.
That was a huge bridge to make. So first, it was just identifying that A, I needed to make that jump. And then B, it's just reading, listening, watching the basketball, studying to be able to make those jumps and make the conclusions. Because really all of our jobs is just about, we like this player more than that player, we like this coach better than this coach, like whatever it is. And then we have to tell the big dogs in the room that those are our conclusions, and either they agree, they don't, maybe that sparks something for them, but at the end of the day, we got to have our opinions and stand on it.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly, that conviction. Yeah, no, that's well said. I love that. I was really curious, but that's going to help, you know, coaches listening, that, you know, when that time comes and you're in the room, it's not, some of it is what you say, but so much of it is what you project, and how whatever you're projecting in that room is how they, you know, how that makes them feel. They know what you're capable of, and they've probably done their homework to a certain degree. But when you're in that room at that particular time, there's a conviction and a feeling that you want to portray that, like, I really believe I'm good at what I do, without being a jerk about it.
No, there is thin line between confidence and arrogance.
100%.
But the majority of communication is conveyed by your tone, your body language.
Yes.
That can really just like send those underlying messages that, like, if you're laying back, you're too relaxed. If you're leaning forward, you're into it and you're engaged, or something like that. I don't know. But
yeah, for sure.
Now you're making me over here adjust myself and wonder if I'm actually like,
sit up, showing Dougie, sit up straight.
Yeah, I am. That's
the word. In the presence,
that was not
a,
my.
You're in the presence of a GM here, Dougie. Sit up.
No, but well, you make such a good point, because like when you're writing a scouting report for something, this was something that it took me a little while to learn. If you're writing a scouting report for a team, if you put on every set that team runs, these kids are going to forget every one of those. But if you give them the top five actions and then maybe like put the rest of them on paper, and if they can remember them, they can. Like, that was something that I've learned before, is we used to put about 10, 15 every action that they had on paper, but we would go over and we would show them about 5 to 6 of them. Because then at that point, they're seeing the main ones. And then if they can remember the rest, okay, that's great. But if not, at least that's our job to remember the rest and to call them out as they're happening. So that's a great point, because you don't want to convey too much information. You don't want to say too little, because then they're not going to be prepared. And to your point, as you were just saying, your body language, the way you're talking, it, if you're not seeming like you're engaged, they're not going to be engaged. So that hits the nail right on the head. So what we will do is, and fortunately for you, we actually started a new way of going with things. Rather than ending with the final question, we actually got into something which is more just kind of hot seat questions. And really all it is, Alan was just mentioning about like the interview process. Really all it is just a couple questions to kind of get you in the mindset of, say you were sitting in an interview. I don't want you to treat it like an interview right now and be all, you know, we're not trying to interview you, but more just kind of seeing how you think on, like, without having anything predetermined. And don't worry, they're all easy questions, relatively easy questions, but really just to see how you think in live action and just to kind of get people an idea of just your mindset. But that being said, starting with the hot seat question for number one, really we had, what's one weakness you feel that you have learned over the course of either from being a player to a coach or just your span of being a coach? Is there anything you feel like you weren't very strong at that you ultimately turned into a strength and grew better at?
I don't know if this is truly started as a weakness, but I was definitely a bit hesitant to broach sensitive topics with the players. And I don't know if that's just my mindset. I just needed a mindset shift. I honestly don't know where it stemmed from, but I overcame just with Oscar Tshiebwe. Like, he is the best human being I've ever known. But it just got to the point where I felt comfortable. He made me feel comfortable. They're like, hey, like, how's your family doing? Like, I know they're still over there. Like, tell me, like, how are you as a person doing? And that first, like, relationship really helped, that these guys at the end of the day are people and they have world outside of basketball. And sometimes when they are in a slump or they're struggling or they're frustrated, sometimes it doesn't stem from the basketball. It actually is something else seeping into the basketball. When I first started, I was definitely hesitant to just have those tough, sensitive conversations. But at the end of the day, like, those are necessary conversations to make sure that they are at their best to succeed. And part of my job is to make sure that they feel comfortable coming to me with those things, whether it's loss and grief that's inevitable or a breakup or whatever right. It may be.
That's a great point.
Yeah. That's you know, great. It's funny. You were probably erring on the side of being respectful to start with. I'm going through that now, getting to know our players here. Like, I have to be intentional with that. I was talking to one yesterday, his girlfriend's birthday is this weekend. You know, I'm like, please just tell me you didn't go with the gift card. He's like, no, coach, you know, yeah, I got her flowers. I got her some jewelry, going out to eat. You know, I'm like, well, that's great, you know. But no, you were probably erring on the side of being respectful, but you kind of know when it's time, because they kind of give you alerts or signals that they're ready for that in your conversation. So you kind of picked up on that with Oscar, which is great. So yeah, great answer.
But I loved how you used the word intentional, because you do honestly have to be intentional with your effort in these types of relationships.
Absolutely.
Like, you're not just going to naturally build such a strong relationship built on trust and honesty and integrity, like, nothing without actually putting in the effort, conscious effort.
Yeah, no doubt.
I've had coaches I play for that they start every conversation, and there's one in particular. I give him a shout out every time on here, I swear, my high school coach. Every time I talk to him, first thing he asks, how's your family? How's everybody doing? Everybody good? Yeah? Okay. And then he'll get to talking about ball or something like, but he always at like, he, oh, no, don't talk about any of that. How's your family doing? Good. Okay. You know, he always has to ask. And it's just, at one point you're like, it feel like you're reiterating the same thing over and over again, but he's genuine. And to exactly to your point, as long as you're genuine and you truly care about it, like, it can definitely be perceived, and you can understand from their side, like, wow, this guy really does care. So that's great feedback. The next one would be, speaking of feedback, the best piece of feedback, or really any information that you feel that you have been shared with throughout your career. So anything, like, anybody ever give you any advice, any feedback, any information at all to help you grow in the profession, and how did that help you grow?
The one piece of advice that really comes to mind, or at least at first, is just go above and beyond what's asked of you, right? Like, do the projects that you're curious about, regardless of what you're tasked, right? Like, for me, I made a video for the top 45 prospects in the draft, and then I showed them to Justin and Danny. I was like, hey, like, what do you think about my thoughts and my conclusions? Like, what am I missing? And I was thankful that they spent the time to actually watch the video, sat down with me, and then it just sparked conversation. But that was something that I wasn't asked to do. I just, in my free time at night, I was just going right away and answering the major questions about each player. And then it actually helped, because now I've built a better relationship with those two men. But also, I got extreme great feedback, so that the next draft cycle, I'm like, oh, this is how I should at least think about it. Whether I agree with him or not is a whole different question.
Yeah.
Changes a little bit about my thought process.
Yeah, that's awesome.
No doubt. Then on the flip side of kind of ultimately being the first question that I asking for a weakness, but how you turned it into a strength, just more, if someone were, now I'm going to put it out there, so then if, just in case anybody that you work with, I know you're not maybe be throwing your resume around, but if you were looking to go to another position, or if somebody were looking to hire you to lead a basketball department as you are now, what's, do you feel the biggest piece of value that you add, and really how do you use that, more or less looking for something that young coaches can learn, like a type of skill or a type of personality trait that maybe they can develop to help themselves grow?
For me, it's just grit, I would say, is that whenever I go through an interview process, even the previous one with the Utah Jazz, I truly want to demonstrate that I go above and beyond. I work hard. I don't cheat anything, because at the end of the day, a lot of our jobs is, if you put more time in it, you're going to get more out of it. And so for me, it's watching different types of basketball. It's watching everybody from even like this most recent draft class, like AJ DeBonsa. I've watched him for 3 years. Like, I've seen him grow. When coming to BYU, like, it's a whole other context, right? And like stuff like that is like, if you truly genuinely convey that, you know, there's going to be adversity, there's going to be bumps in the road, but, you know, we've all faced them and we've all built strategies how to overcome, and then just convey those strategies to the interviewer on the other side that you may not know everything. It may be a learning curve, but at the end of the day, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to get the job done.
And don't be afraid to ask questions. That's you know, if getting the job done, don't be afraid to ask questions. But you said you watch a lot of film. How much would you say on average, like in a day? We'll say in a day, and then we'll ask about a week. If do you have like a range as to how much you would guess you watch?
I try to at least watch a game every single day.
Okay.
Some days I'm better where I get up to 3 games. Other day, like, it does truly depend. Like, sometimes when there's a Jazz home game, like, show up at the arena at 4:30. So that kind of shortens my day quite a bit.
Exactly. But
at the end of the day, I do try to watch at least a game every day. So that's at least, I don't know, games are an hour-ish long, 48 minutes. Yeah. So at least 7 hours a week-ish.
Once you cut out all the commercials, you cut out all, if you get them on like Synergy, yeah, watch all the clips, yeah, and cut out all the unnecessary, yes, stuff, and you can watch a game quick too. Yeah. Yes.
And probably she falls asleep with League Pass on, I'm guessing. So that's probably her melatonin is watching a little, you know, League Pass, you know, who's on late. Well, late.
I'm not going to lie, that has happened with some Lakers game.
That's right. Exactly. Blazers. I'm sure. Exactly. Yeah. Clippers. No doubt.
Yeah.
At that point, you're always watching games.
Yeah, but I am lucky. Mountain time is kind of perfect. Like, the first East Coast games are at 5. Like, the last one's at 8 for us. Like, it's kind of, we're perfect.
That is. Yeah. No, no doubt. No doubt.
No, that's great. And like the main reason for like the, I guess, since this is the first time we're doing it, to give everybody an idea, like the hot seat questions is because a lot of times in the profession, I'm sure you're aware and all of us, but you don't necessarily have to go through an interview process, but we like to kind of at least give people what some questions might look like. So then when they're in that seat, if they get an interview question, at least it'll give those people, those young coaches or coaches in general, like a, this is how my mindset should be. This is what I should be looking to approach. So first off, thank you for being the guinea pig to be able to us to start using this, but those were great. That definitely gives a lot of people clarity and ideas, just some things that you've turned weakness to strength, the feedback, some, you know, some pros that you bring to a program. Not that we didn't think there were any with the background that you have, the absolute tremendous resume that you have already. So thank you though.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Mage, not sure if you have any final questions, but that's really all I had.
Yeah. Nah, we just, you know, speaking for Dougie before he lands the plane here. Yeah. Thank you. Number one, congratulations again. Number two, I'm sure you've heard that a lot, but I think the best thing that people will pull from this is just be who you are, right? Sometimes that's our best superpower beyond our skill level and our skill sets. Is just be who you are, because I think that's the first thing people feel before they get to anything else. You clearly proven that. You're exactly where you're supposed to be, which is awesome. And thank you for jumping on. You made Rising Coaches better today. So thank you.
No, you guys made me better. This was a lot of fun. So I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, awesome. Glad you enjoyed it.
Hopefully we prepped you for, well, again, we know you're not, but in case the interview process and just reflecting, we always say too, like the reflection is probably one of the best parts, just because once you start thinking about yourself, once you start thinking about your career, your history, everything that you've done, it kind of opens up your mind a little bit, makes you feel a little better about the steps that you have taken. Sometimes you can forget that, you can lose that.
Definitely, yeah. Reflection always breeds gratitude, for sure.
There it is. There it is. Yeah. I didn't want to say it, but you got it out. Again, Coach Benson, thank you very much for hopping on. We really do. We say it to everybody, but like truly sincere about just you taking the time. Again, you have a lot on your plate right now being in the season and everything that you're juggling, all the hats you're wearing. Just thank you for just taking some time to be able to talk with us and to help other coaches listening.
Absolutely.
Of course. It was my pleasure.
And all of you coaches out there, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, and everybody out there, keep working. Hopefully one day you can be wearing that GM hat, sitting in the same seat or a similar seat. And to all the coaches, keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.